What's up, my spooky bitches? We're back, baby. We got another episode here of the Hello Sydney podcast, a podcast for horror lovers where we discuss any and all things horror, and it's me, your girl, Sydney. I'm slowly catching up with, like, 2024 movie releases. I feel like I've been really behind. I don't remember if I think I talked about Immaculate last week. I also watched Imaginary this week. A lot of people hating on it. I actually really fucking loved it. I also watched that Sting movie, the one about like the giant creepy ass like alien spider. That one's not coming out until April 12th, but like highly recommend. Super freaky. I also watched this movie called Stupid Games. It's like kind of indie and low budget. You can tell by the acting, but like the concept of it is really different and really fun. And I actually really enjoyed how it turned out. But you know, the most surprising, like pleasantly surprising movie I've watched in the last week is a movie that I literally just finished watching. Like I turned off my TV and came here to record this. It's a movie called Mute Witness from 1995. I had literally never heard of it before in my life, like never has been talked about on the horror front as far as I'm concerned, and it just showed up on Shudder, so I'm like, oh, this will be fun. What a fucking hidden gem, you guys. Like, it's funny, it's suspenseful, it'll keep you on the edge of your seat. Honestly, like, there's one character that, like, you trust, and then you don't trust, and then you trust, and then you don't trust. Like, you don't know what the fuck to even believe, and I'm so pleasantly surprised, and what a shame that people have, like, I'm saying people because I'm assuming, because again, I've never heard anybody talk about this. What a shame that people don't know about this movie. I'm shook. This movie came out in 1995. That's the same year that I was birthed. So I have been on Earth as long as this movie has. And like my 28, almost 29 years have been absolutely wasted without it. I'm so serious. I fucking loved this movie. I still haven't seen Late Night with the Devil yet because that one's coming to Shudder on April 19th. So I'm like kind of torn if I want to go see it in the theaters because I'm dying to see it. I don't know if I want to wait the next like 3 weeks for it to come out. Less than 3 weeks, but still. So I don't know. I'm kind of torn. I kind of want to like get it with I want to see it in the theater. I want the theater experience. I feel like it's a good movie for that. So I don't know. I might go see that this week. I have a feeling that that's probably going to be one of my favorites of 2024 so far, but I'm also trying to go in with low expectations because usually when I do that, I like the movie a lot better. Like I did that with Imaginary because I saw that it had like really bad ratings and I was like, wow, this is pleasantly surprising how much I enjoy this actually. Now, obviously you guys know that I love horror movies, ride or die for the horror genre, but something that you might not know about me, or maybe you do from TikTok, is that I also love true crime. And I love true crime to the point where I actually made it my whole career. I work in prison, not on the security side, more on like the treatment / like reentry rehabilitation side. It's my life, literally. And I don't just say that like willy-nilly. Like I have a master's degree in forensic psychology. So like I'm qualified when I talk about things like this. I don't want people to think I'm just like pulling it out of my ass. I actually kind of know what I'm talking about. And again, I've worked in prison for like 6 years at this point. So today I actually decided to do like a combination of the two things I love, because I'm going to tell you a little bit about a true crime case. But this true crime case is the inspiration behind a number of iconic horror villains that we have. And I'm obviously talking about the case of Ed Gein, otherwise known as the Butcher of Plainfield or the Plainfield Ghoul. And by the time I'm done telling you guys the story, you will understand why he coined that nickname. I would argue that there are probably more movies based on this man than any other, like, I don't want to say historical figure because he's not a historical figure. He's a criminal. But there are probably more movies based on this man than there are any other person that has ever lived. I would honestly say that because, again, I'm not just saying like movies that are about his life. I'm saying characters that were based on him, characters that were inspired by the heinous, heinous things that he did. He's the man behind Norman Bates. He's the man behind Leatherface. He's the man behind Buffalo Bill. He's the man behind Otis Driftwood. Like the list goes on and on. And if you're familiar with the characters that I just said, as I'm telling his story, you will definitely see where they picked up inspiration. So let's just jump right into it. This is going to be maybe disturbing for some. If you're listening to a horror podcast, I'm assuming that you can take like some pretty serious topics. But again, this is a true crime story. So this did really happen. So just be warned. So Ed Gein, his full name was Edward Theodore Gein, and he was born on August 27, 1906 in Wisconsin. His parents' names were George and Augusta, and he also had an older brother named Henry. Now, this guy has I don't really like to use this term, but I guess the quintessential serial killer upbringing, because most serial killers were not raised in nurturing, loving households, as you can assume. So Ed Gein's father was a raging alcoholic. I didn't read anything about whether that led him to abusing his children whatsoever, but considering this was the early 1900s, I'm kind of assuming that he did. His mother, Augusta, on the other hand, was extremely religious. She was Lutheran, and she often, like, kind of forced her beliefs down her son's throats. Like, she preached to them about how basically everybody on earth is innately immoral and everybody's evil. People who drink are evil. All women are whores. Basically, like, all women are promiscuous and the devil uses them as, like, instruments. She would force her sons to read the Bible with her every single day. Like, every single afternoon would read verses from the Bible and usually focused on, like, the Book of Revelation, to, like, warn them about impending death and the impending apocalypse and, like, murder and retribution. So while Henry, the older brother, wasn't really fucking into this and kind of knew his mother was, like, too much, Ed Gein, on the other hand, completely idolized her to the point where he became obsessed with her, despite the fact that there are reports that she was actually verbally abusive towards him, and I'm sure towards Henry too. Like I said, one of the things that Augusta preached was how, like, drinking is evil. So as you can imagine, she actually fucking loathed her own husband because, again, her husband was an alcoholic. He had trouble keeping a job. So he was never, there was no stability basically in this household. So again, George Gein had trouble keeping a job mostly because of his alcoholism. At one point, he actually owned a local grocery store, but he ended up selling it and moved the family from La Crosse, Wisconsin to Plainfield, Wisconsin, which became their permanent residence. And it was like a completely isolated home on 155 acres of farmland. Now, Augusta's already completely in control, like really strict and completely in control of her children. And now moving them to this remote, isolated area gives her the opportunity to, like, essentially isolate them even more than she already was. She did not allow any outsiders on her farm for fear that they would negatively influence her sons. And they were not allowed to have any social engagement other than with her. So Ed Gein, as a child at this point, the only people he's able to even speak to or engage with are his overly controlling, super devoutly religious, crazy mother and his older brother, who wants nothing to do with any of this. Oh, right. And his alcoholic father, can't forget him. So Ed Gein did start leaving the farm to attend school, which is surprising that Augusta even let him do that. However, anytime he did try to make friends, she punished him and would not allow him to. Other than school, most of his time was spent doing chores on the farm, helping out his mother, obviously. Later on, after he committed his crimes and when they were reflecting on it, a lot of his, like, classmates and teachers say that Ed Gein was shy, and they remember him as having, like, strange mannerisms, so he would kind of randomly start laughing or just doing, like, odd things. But again, keep in mind, this kid's had absolutely, like, zero social interactions, like, other than his family basically his whole life. And this isolation continues into Ed's adult life. And on April 1st, 1940, at this point, Ed would have been about 34 or so. His father died of a heart failure when he was 66 years old. So this left Ed and his older brother, Henry, to kind of, like, pick up doing more chores around the farm, obviously, and also kind of picking up odd jobs to help cover the living expenses and help their mother survive and keep this house. So again, they would kind of do odd jobs. They would help people around, even though they were very isolated, but they would, like, go into town and help the neighbors. They worked as handymen a lot. And a weird thing, and, like, I really question what happened, there's not much about it, but Ed also babysat for neighbors a lot. And once you find out what this guy did later on, like, that will really fucking creep you out. However, they did say that he seemed to enjoy babysitting because he probably related more easily to children than he did adults, which is actually really fucking sad because, again, this guy just had, he had no fucking shot. Like, he had zero interaction with anybody his age. Anytime he tried to make friends, he was punished. Because he was kind of odd and shy, he was probably bullied. So at this point, this guy probably doesn't even know how to interact with other adults because the only adult interaction he's had is with his mother shoving these beliefs down his throat that, like, everybody is innately immoral and terrible and we're all gonna fucking die and go to hell. you know, not very adult conversations that you want to have with people. So Henry at this point, like Ed, had been incredibly isolated, had been denied any social interaction, but he at least wanted to try and get out there more. So he actually began dating this woman who was a mother of two, and she had divorced her previous husband. And Henry informed Ed of his plans to move in with this woman. He's like, I want to move away from mom. I'm moving in with this woman. And he kind of spoke to Ed about how he was concerned about how attached Ed was to their mother. And on top of that, he would also pretty often speak negatively about his mother to Ed. And it said that Ed would almost be like personally offended by this and would be like shocked and hurt that his brother was speaking negatively about their mother, who really was like mentally and verbally abusing them. So he had every right to do that. So again, Henry discusses his plans to move off the farmland and in with this woman. And then there's this event that happens on May 16th, 1944. So Ed is working out on the property and he's burning away some like vegetation that's out there. And all of a sudden the fire gets a little bit out of control and the firefighters have to be called. So firefighters come to the property. They end up being able to extinguish the fire. They completely put it out before it can do any more damage. However, once the fire is out, Ed is like, oh, my brother Henry was here and now he's missing. So it's night at this point. So they call a search party and they're out there with like lanterns and flashlights and whatnot. And all of a sudden the search party stumbles upon the dead body of 43-year-old Henry Gein. Henry was found lying face down and it was pretty evident that he had been dead for some time. And it actually seems that the death, or at least at first, they believed the death to be the cause of heart failure, since he had not been burned or injured by the fire at all, actually. And that wouldn't be too far off because their father did die of heart failure as well at 66. So he was a bit older than Henry at 43. But clearly it seems like there's some heart issues going on in the family. So it seems totally plausible, right? Until you find out that Henry's body was found to have bruises on his head. But despite this, police still rule out foul play. They're like, nope, nothing questionable here. Despite the fact that the coroner actually ended up determining that the cause of death was asphyxiation. Again, it's the 40s, so clearly nobody really gives a fuck, and they also just simply don't have the technology or like the DNA to be able to even really investigate this, so it's just easier for them to rule it an accident or whatever. Now, kind of a spoiler alert, Ed Gein was never charged with his brother's death. He was never like formally arrested or even really looked at as a suspect for his brother's death. When he was being questioned years later about other crimes that he committed, questions about his brother's death was brought up and he did not admit anything and they didn't even really go after him for it at all. However, quite a few years later, an individual who studied the case named George Arndt said that it was possible and likely, and I quote, that Henry's death was the Cain and Abel aspect of this case. So Cain and Abel, if you're not familiar, Cain kills Abel in the Bible. So it's like a brother on brother crime. So it's very highly suspected by a lot of people that Ed Gein killed his brother Henry, most likely because Henry spoke negatively about their mother and Ed just got to a point where he couldn't handle it and he snapped. But regardless, it's 1944 and whether he was killed or whether he did die by accident, Henry's dead and Ed and Augusta are now completely alone. Not that Henry really ever had any sway over Ed, but I feel like at least he must have been some sort of buffer for Ed and Augusta, and now Augusta is just completely free to say and do whatever the fuck she wants to Ed. However, not long after Henry's death, Augusta has a severe stroke that ends up leaving her paralyzed. So now she has to entirely rely on Ed to take care of her, which of course he does so willingly because he's so obsessed with her and idolizes her so strongly. So he completely devotes his life now to taking care of his mother. So you might think like, oh, Ed's an adult now, like maybe Augusta isn't that bad, right? Fucking wrong. So there was this incident recounted about 1945. Augusta and Ed visited a neighbor, this man named Smith. He lived nearby and they were buying something like hay or some shit. And I guess Augusta witnessed this man beating a dog, which most normal people, fuck that. You don't fuck with dogs. You don't fuck with cats. You don't fuck with dogs. You don't fuck with the elderly. Like, it's just, you don't fuck with kids. Come on. Like, everybody knows this shit. And Augusta apparently became enraged. But the reason that she became enraged wasn't because this man was beating a dog. It was because there was a woman inside the house that came out, and the woman at the house yelled at Smith to stop, which is the fucking right thing to do. Good for her. However, Augusta was so enraged at the fact that there was a present, this presence of this woman, because she knew that this woman was not married to Smith, and therefore she had no business being in his home. Because remember, she's all about like morality, and like all women are whores, and they're just like instruments of lust and fucking useless, essentially. So Augusta could not give a fuck less about witnessing this dog be beaten, but instead she was enraged by what she calls, and I quote, Smith's harlot, end quote.
This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
Augusta's health continues to decline, and I'm sure the fact that she's such just like a miserable, awful human doesn't help that at all. But eventually she has a second stroke and continues to deteriorate, and Augusta Gein dies on December 29th, 1945, when she is 67 years old. As you can imagine, Ed is absolutely devastated by her death. This is the only person he's ever had in the world. This is the only friend he's ever had, when you really think about it, because again, she was like, he obviously didn't realize that she was abusive. And that's a really sad part. And I say sad, and I'm like, I never excuse the crimes. I don't feel bad for the adult. However, I always do feel bad for the child who didn't know better. Like, as a child, he didn't know that his mother was abusing him. Like, this is the only form of love he's ever really known. So he thought this was normal. You know, that's like a really sad thing to think about. So again, obviously, after his crimes became publicized, people did interviews with Ed. And in one interview, he said about the death of his mother, and I quote, that he lost his only friend and one true love, and he was absolutely alone in the world, end quote. Only friend, I can understand. One true love is fucking sketchy. What the fuck was going on here? There's no evidence of any sort of sexual abuse or even physical abuse. Again, like, really, it was only said that she verbally abused him, but I don't know. I feel like there was more going on here. Again, obviously, that's just speculation, but regardless, I think we can all agree that this is not really a normal mother-son relationship that we have going on here. So again, Ed is completely devastated. He's alone in the world. At this point, he's 39 years old. And following his mother's death, he completely boards up any rooms that were used by her. And this isn't even like just her bedroom. So this includes the parlor downstairs that she had frequented, the living room, just like multiple rooms that she had used frequently. He sealed them off and left them completely untouched and kind of treated them almost like a shrine. So like the rest of the house he let get in terrible condition. Like they were like he was basically living in squalor, with the exception of the rooms that were boarded off that remained completely pristine and untouched from when his mother used them. Now, if you can't see the parallels here already with Norman Bates, then you clearly haven't seen Psycho, but we'll get to that later. So now that his mother's out of the picture, it's at this point in Ed's life where his interests start to kind of take a turn for the worst. So he starts becoming interested in like these pulp magazines, which is fine, until you learn that the pulp magazines he was reading involved cannibalism or Nazi atrocities. Specifically, he became really interested in this woman named Ilse Koch. Now, let me take you down a little trip down sadism fucking road and tell you about this woman, Ilse Koch. So Ilse was a German war criminal, okay? She had no official position in the Nazi regime. However, her husband, whose name was Karl Otto Koch, was the commandant at Buchenwald. Sorry if I'm saying that wrong. Buchenwald, which was a concentration camp. Ilse Koch was so sadistic that she ended up coining many nicknames for herself, including the concentration camp murderess, the beast of Buchenwald, the queen of Buchenwald, the red witch of Buchenwald, the butcher widow, and the bitch of Buchenwald. Now, what makes her so sadistic and what makes her like an inspiration and a role model, as you'll see for Ed Gein, is it was said that Ilse would take prisoners who were tattooed specifically. She would target them and she would kill them, or at least like take them to be killed, in order to make lampshades and other items from their skin because they had tattoos and they would be decorative for her fucking skin items. So after the war ended, and obviously like all the Nazis were on trial and stuff, Ilse found herself in that commotion as well. And during her trial, there were two former prisoners that had testified in 1950 that they witnessed, probably in about 1941 when Ilse was in Buchenwald, that they witnessed her prepare a lampshade from human skin. Now, this part's fucking crazy because ultimately she was originally found guilty of war crimes on August 14th, 1947, and she was sentenced to life imprisonment. However, not long after, she appealed it, and there was this guy named General Clay. I don't even really know what the fuck this man's position was, but he said, and I quote, "There was no convincing evidence that she had selected inmates for extermination in order to secure tattooed skins, or that she possessed any articles made of human skin." And this man reduced her sentence to 4 years. Don't worry though, baby, that didn't last for long, because karma will always fucking get you. So obviously this caused outrage. People were fucking pissed. They're like, this woman is a war criminal. She's a fucking sadist. Like, she needs to be locked up. So the West German judiciary ended up putting her back on trial for crimes against German nationals. And the military court at Dachau, which I think is the one that like kind of exonerated her, reduced her sentence at least, they didn't have jurisdiction. So now it was completely up to this different court. And she was rearrested immediately following her release after that 4 years. And this time she was ultimately convicted of 7 misdemeanor counts of incitement to grievous bodily harm, 1 count of incitement to attempted murder, and 1 count of incitement to murder. And she was once again sentenced to life. So she's put back in prison, but Ilse Koch ended up committing suicide by hanging herself at a women's prison that she was in on September 1st, 1967 at the age of 60. It's said that at the end of her life, she started experiencing delusions and she actually became convinced that concentration camp survivors were abusing her in her cell. And I just think that gives me fucking goosebumps, because what poetic justice. I like to think that that is the spirits of the people that she fucked with coming back for their fucking revenge, and they drove her to madness, and I'm fucking happy about it. She did leave a suicide note that read, and I quote, "There is no other way. Death for me is a release," end quote. So this is the person that Ed Gein became obsessed with, and it was almost like he needed to find something to fill the place of his mother, who he idolized and he was obsessed with. So he looked to Ilse, and he looked to other like different writers and different magazines and just different stories of these really sadistic fucking crimes. So this all now leads us to the morning of November 16th, 1957. Ed Gein at this point is about 51 years old, and 58-year-old Bernice Warden disappears from the hardware store that she owns in Plainfield, Wisconsin. Unlucky for Mr. Gein, Bernice's son actually is the deputy sheriff of the town, Frank Warden. So he enters the store that his mother owns this morning, and he finds that the cash register is open and there's blood on the floor. So obviously now everybody's assuming the worst. Frank Warden immediately picks out Ed Gein because he tells investigators that the night before his mother disappeared, Gein had been in the hardware store. And then he returned the next morning, which was the morning his mother went missing, and he bought a gallon of antifreeze. And this was corroborated when they found a sales slip for antifreeze on a receipt that was written the same morning that Bernice had disappeared. So because of this, and because they could prove that Ed pretty much was the last person to see this woman alive, they arrested him immediately. So he was arrested at a nearby grocery store that evening, and a search of his farm quickly ensued. And this is where the story really gets fucked up. Again, if you can't really handle true crime, the next like probably 5-10 minutes of this is going to be pretty fucking disturbing. So just a fair warning. So the sheriff's deputies enter Ed's farm, and what they find in the shed on the property is Bernice Warden decapitated, hung upside down, strung up by her legs. She's got a crossbar at her ankles and she's got ropes tying her wrists together. And they said that her torso was, and I quote, dressed out like a deer. And ultimately, her cause of death had been that she was shot with a .22 caliber rifle, and any like mutilations and the fact that she was literally ripped open were made after her death, which, thank God, because this poor fucking woman, I'm hoping at least her death was quick and she didn't have to endure any of this shit, because this is fucking sick. So obviously this leads the authorities to search the whole property, and what they found in the home and just like scattered around the property led them to call this place Ed Gein's House of Horrors. So the items that they found are in bullet points, and I'm just going to go ahead and read through those for you. Okay. So we got whole human bones and fragments, a wastebasket made of human skin covering several chairs, skulls on his bedposts, very decorative, female skulls, some with the tops sawn off, bowls made from human skulls, a corset made from a female torso skinned from the shoulders to the waist, leggings made from human leg skin. This shit's fucking sick, man. Masks made from the skin of female heads. Mary Hogan's face mask in a paper bag. Okay, so we haven't gotten to Mary Hogan yet, but we will. Mary Hogan's skull in a box. Bernice Worden's entire head in a burlap sack. Bernice Worden's heart in a plastic bag in front of Gein's stove. 9 vulva in a shoebox. That one makes me want to fucking vomit. A young girl's dress and the vulvas of 2 females judged to have been about 15 years old. A belt made from female human nipples. 4 noses. A pair of lips on a window shade drawstring. A lampshade made from the skin of a human face. Fingernails from female fingers. You know it's fucked up when that's the most normal thing. And a female human nipple doorbell. Take a fucking second and take that all in. So obviously they had to take this all in for evidence, right? So they say that they photographed all these things and then they were, and I quote, decently disposed of, end quote. They don't explain what the fuck that means. And quite frankly, I don't even know if I want to know. But the thing here, and this is why Ed Gein is not exactly considered a serial killer, because the only death, once again, spoiler alert, the only death that he ends up being convicted of is Bernice Worden's. However, how'd he get all these bodies and all these body parts, right? So it was discovered that between 1947 and 1952, he was grave robbing, and that's how he got all these bodies. So he would visit these 3 local graveyards in the night, and he would dig up recently buried bodies. And he claims that he was doing this while he was in like a daze-like state. And I honestly wouldn't doubt that this man was just entirely dissociating while he was doing this. Now, Ed claimed that probably about 30 of these visits between these years, he left the graveyard completely empty-handed. He kind of like came out of his daze while in the cemetery and just like wandered out like, what the fuck am I doing, and went home empty-handed. However, on many other occasions, he did end up successfully digging up graves of recently buried women, and he would specifically pick women who he believed resembled his mother, and he would take these bodies home, and he would make his paraphernalia. And that's where he got all of the shit that was in his home. So he ultimately admitted to grave robbing from a total of 9 graves. And he was upfront with the investigators and told them which graves and what their locations were. So they like kind of were questioning it, because they're like, how would this guy be able to single-handedly dig up all these graves in the night, like in a single night, without being noticed? However, it was discovered that this was entirely true. Gein was actually telling the truth, because they went to examine the caskets and they found that one casket was entirely empty. Another casket had a crowbar that belonged to Gein that he left in there. And then another casket, most of the body in the casket was missing. Gein had actually returned some rings, which I guess that was fucking nice of him, and some other body parts that I guess he just didn't want or maybe couldn't make anything of. But otherwise, most of the body was indeed missing. He went on to tell investigators that obviously, like, he kind of descended into madness once his mother died, right? Like, we all saw that coming based on how their relationship was from what we know. So he admitted that once she died, He created a woman suit because, and I quote, he could become his mother to literally crawl into her skin, end quote. He did, however, deny any necrophilia. So at least he has that going for him. However, the reason that he denied that he had sex with the bodies was because, and I quote, they smelled too bad, end quote. My God, I have so many concerns. The only thing keeping you from having sex with a dead body is the fact that they smell too bad. I mean, at least there was something, but fucking still, man, Jesus Christ. So now this is where the whole Mary Hogan thing comes into play, because he's being interrogated and they're asking him about Mary Hogan, because obviously they just found her fucking skull in his home. And she had been missing. She was a tavern owner in the town and she had been missing since December 8th, 1954. She was never found. Nobody ever really knew anything about what happened to her. And again, her fucking head was found in his house. Initially, Ed admitted to shooting her, but later on, he retracted his confession and said that he had no memory of any details of Mary Hogan's death. So now, obviously, like, people in the town, it's a small town, they're finding out this stuff about Ed Gein, and the 16-year-old comes forward, and I guess his parents were friends of Ed Gein's, and they they went to like baseball games together. They went to the movies together. So like Ed actually did have some human contact after his mother died. And they ended up all reporting that they believed that Ed, or at the point they believed that Ed Gein kept shrunken heads in his house, because they had been to his house and they were like, oh, shrunken heads. And they thought that they were relics that were sent, or at least Ed had told them that they were sent by my cousin who was in World War II. And they're just some relics from the Philippines that he sent me. Lo and fucking behold, these were human facial skins. They were not fucking shrunken heads. These were real human skins that he fucking peeled from the corpses that he grave robbed from. Imagine how fucked up this family must have been, like, finding that out. Like, you probably sat in this man's house and like had tea as these shrunken heads, so you thought, were looking at you, and it turns out they are fucking peeled off skin. I don't know if I'd be able to go on. So Ed obviously is still being questioned. He's still being interrogated about his involvement in other suspected crimes, which we'll get to. And the sheriff at this point was a man named Art Schley. I think that's how you say it, Art Schley. And apparently during the interrogation, it was reported that Schley assaulted Gein by like throwing his head and face into a brick wall. And because of this, Gein's confession was ruled inadmissible. So that's how he fucking got away with Mary Hogan's murder, is a fucking technicality. That's bullshit. Art Schley ended up dying also of heart failure. A lot of heart failure in this story. He ended up dying of heart failure in 1968. He was only 43 years old. And this was right before Gein's trial. And a lot of people who knew Schley believed that like that the trauma of his crimes and like having to witness all those body parts and like the dead body, along with the fear of having to testify during Gein's trial, at which point he obviously would be asked about assaulting him. People believe that that caused his early death, and I entirely agree with that. So there's multiple other crimes that Ed Gein was suspected of at this point after they found out what he had already been doing. So in 1957, the Wisconsin authorities confronted Gein with a list of cases that they had that were still unsolved. That took place between the death of Ed's mother and the disappearance slash murder of Bernice Worden. Because again, obviously everybody seems to know that Ed's mother's death is really what caused his whole spiral. So one of these suspected crimes was the disappearance of Georgia Weckler, who was 8 years old, and she disappeared near her parents slash family's farm home in Fort Atkinson. She had been given a ride from school by a neighbor, and she was last seen checking the family mailbox and taking out a stack of mail, and then she was just never seen again, which is so crazy because obviously like you're so close to your house, like you're at the fucking mailbox, this poor girl. However, witnesses did report that they saw a dark colored 1936 Ford sedan in the vicinity that afternoon, and they had never seen that car before. And Ed Gein actually owned a black 1937 Ford. Another crime that Ed was suspected of was the disappearance of Evelyn Grace Hartley, who was a 15-year-old girl at the time, and she went missing while she was babysitting for this local college professor on the evening of October 4th, 1953. So her father that night knew she was babysitting, so called the home several times because she was supposed to check in. And when she didn't, he called, got no answer. So he drove to the house. And when he got there, he found that the doors were locked, the lights and radio were on, and there were items strewn all over the house. He found like one of her shoes upstairs, one of her shoes downstairs, as if they had like come off in a struggle or something. He found broken glasses upstairs. So obviously there was something going on here, and he knew that. And Evelyn was not in the house. Another crime that Ed was suspected of was the disappearance of Victor Travis, who was 43, and Raymond Burgess, who was also 43. And they went missing on November 1st, 1952, after they went off deer hunting. So they went off to hunt deer, and they stopped in this bar that was called Max Bar in Plainfield, Wisconsin. And they left the bar around 7 p.m. They both got in a car, Burgess's car to be exact, and they drove away, never to be seen again, and no trace of them was ever found. And it's said that the area that they were hunting in was on the farm next to Ed Gein's farm. And the fourth crime that Ed was ultimately suspected of was the disappearance of James Walsh, who was 32 years old, which was actually one of Gein's neighbors. So Walsh and his wife lived near Gein, and he actually performed a lot of chores for James's wife after James went missing, because obviously like she was a woman, and at the time women can't fucking do chores, or, you know, men support patriarchy and shit, whatever. There were a couple other crimes and disappearances in the area that Ed had been looked at, but ultimately it turns out that he actually passed several lie detectors, and they exonerated Gein of any suspicions of any involvement with any other murders or disappearances. Not to mention his psychiatrists were like, well, none of this would have made sense, and he can't be responsible for any of this because his violence is only directed at people who he thinks resembles his mother. Boom. There it fucking is, baby. It's the same shit that Ed fucking Kemper did. Ed Kemper is a whole different thing, but Ed Kemper basically like started killing a bunch of women. They didn't exactly resemble his mother, but then he ended up murdering his mother and realized that all of his resentment was towards her. And now that she was dead, like, he didn't have to keep killing people. So yes, I believe that as a child, Ed Gein did not know that he was being abused, because again, that's the only love that he knew. And he thought that's like fucking normal. However, I think as an adult, he did start to develop somewhat of an autonomy, especially after his mother died and he was kind of freed from her influence, and realized that she was the fucking villain of his story. She was the villain of his whole life. And I think he started targeting women that looked like her as an act of revenge, even if it was fucking subconscious. So now it's time for Ed to go to trial. And he is arraigned on November 21st, 1957 on one count of first degree murder. And he pled not guilty by reason of insanity. He ended up being diagnosed with schizophrenia, and he was found incompetent to stand trial. So because of this, he was sent to the Central State Hospital for the Criminally Insane, which is a maximum security facility. And he was later transferred to Mendota State Hospital in Madison, Wisconsin. In 1968, Ed's doctors determined that he was, quote, mentally able to confer with counsel and participate in his defense, end quote. So this is fucking like over 10 years after his initial arraignment. So now his trial starts on November 7th, 1968, and it lasted a total of 1 week. According to Ed Gein's psychiatrist who testified, Ed had told him that he did not know if the killing of Warden was intentional or accidental, because Gein had actually told him that he was in the hardware store that morning and he was examining a gun in the hardware store, and it ended up accidentally discharging and killing her. He said he didn't aim it at her, and he doesn't remember anything else about what happened this morning, because as we know from his like grave robbing experiences, he obviously dissociates and goes into these like daze like states. So that seems to be what he's saying happened here. So the defense actually requested that the trial be held without a jury, which is why it only took a week, because they didn't have to deliberate or anything. And the judge, whose name was Judge Robert H. Gallmer, ended up finding Ed Gein guilty on November 14th, 1968. However, it wasn't over yet, because then a second trial had to be held to deal with the idea of Gein's sanity. So it ended up being determined, long story short, the same judge ruled that Gein was not guilty by reason of insanity and ordered him to be committed to the Central State Hospital for the Criminally Insane. Now, there's some common misconceptions about what happens when people are found not guilty by reason of insanity. They're not just going to walk free. It's not easy. They have to go to a mental hospital, and they're probably going to be there for the rest of their life. Honestly, in some cases, they're better off being sentenced to prison. And honestly, I've heard stories of hospitals for the criminally insane, and like from personal experience, prison is crazy, but these fucking hospitals are even crazier. So you probably just want to go to prison. So like, that in no way means that his crimes were wiped away or anything like that. And ultimately, Ed Gein did end up dying in this institution. So he never got out. He never saw freedom again. Now, the judge who presided over both of his trials, Judge Galmer, ended up writing, and I quote, "Due to prohibitive costs, Gein was tried for only one murder, that of Mrs. Worden. He also admitted to the killing of Mary Hogan," end quote. So he was never even officially found guilty of the murder of Mary Hogan, because again, his initial confession and admission was ruled inadmissible, and they didn't even fucking try. I couldn't find anything about like Mary Hogan's family, but like, how fucking infuriating is that, that she technically like never really got any justice? Like, yes, this is the guy that most likely did it and he is locked away for life, but you don't even really get that closure. I don't know, I think that's just super fucked up. So again, obviously Ed is now incarcerated, or in this institution, whatever you want to refer to it as, and he has no like relatives. Obviously he has no offspring or anything, so his house and the property ended up being appraised at $4,700, which is equivalent to $50,000 in 2023. This is 195 fucking acres. I digress. His possessions were scheduled for auction. However, 10 days before this auction, on March 20th, 1958, the house was mysteriously destroyed in a fire. Arson was obviously suspected, but it was never determined to be the official cause of the fire. And that's also probably because the fire chief at this point is none other than Frank Worden, the son of fucking Bernice Worden, who Ed Gein murdered in cold blood. So I don't think he really paid a whole lot of attention to the arson of this fucking man's home. So they told Ed about this happening, about the fire, how it burned down his home, and it said that he just shrugged and said, and I quote, "just as well," end quote. This man had just like no emotion, I guess. I don't fucking know. Gein's Ford sedan was sold at an auction for $760, which is equivalent to $8,000 today, to a carnival sideshow operator, and he charged people 25 cents admission to see it. I cannot find any information on this car. I've looked, but it seemingly disappeared after this random carnival operator bought it. Like I said, Ed Gein was never released. He ended up dying in the mental health institution that he was in. And he died on July 26, 1984, at the age of 77 by respiratory failure, which was secondary to lung cancer. So not heart failure, surprisingly, in this story. He had a graveyard that was set for him at the Plainfield Cemetery. However, over the years, a lot of people started like chipping away pieces of it to kind of keep as souvenirs because, you know, people are fucking sick in the head. And the stone itself was stolen in 2000, but it ended up being recovered in June 2001 in Seattle, Washington. It was actually placed in storage at the local county sheriff's department, and Ed Gein's gravesite now is unmarked. However, people do know where it is, and he's actually buried between his parents and his brother in the same cemetery, which is really kind of fucked up, especially considering the fact that he most likely killed his brother. So that's the story of Ed Gein. Again, like, a lot of people usually mistakenly call him a serial killer, but that's not technically the case, because by definition, a serial killer has had to murder three or more people on three separate occasions. But again, it could be argued that he did murder three people, but by law, he's not a serial killer because he was only found guilty and convicted of one. Which was Bernice's. But he could also, we could also look at him and say, yeah, he also killed Mary Hogan and his fucking brother. Like, come on. Again, most of his crimes and most of the horror stories that you hear about Ed Gein were a result of grave robbing, not murder. So if you've ever watched a horror movie ever, you probably could pick up a lot of where a lot of our villains get inspiration. So the first time this whole story came to public attention was in 1959. And it was in a very little known novel called Psycho. I'm obviously being sarcastic. So yes, Psycho, the movie, was originally a book by Robert Bloch that came out in 1959. And as we know, that ended up becoming one of the greatest, if not the greatest horror film of all time, 1960s Alfred Hitchcock's Psycho. Again, if you've seen Psycho, I think this is all very self-explanatory. but Norman Bates was very clearly based on Ed Gein. And both of them have these weird Oedipus complexes with their mothers. Both of them are obsessed with and worship their mothers. Both of them have their mothers die and become absolute, like, spiral into insanity because of it. Norman Bates exhumed his own mother's body, which, to be completely honest, I'm surprised that's not the direction that Ed Gein went in. However, once again, he was grave robbing people who resembled his mother. Norman Bates in Psycho obviously also had dissociative identity disorder because he took on like the persona of his mother, which, like, looking at Ed Gein's story, is that what he was doing during his quote dazed states? You know, like, I think he was fully dissociating during those. And I know it was like early on and we didn't have as advanced information as we did, but like, did the man have dissociative identity disorder? Did we ever look at him for this? Because he was having some serious bouts of dissociation. Well, I don't think it's entirely far off. Now, another movie that was inspired by Ed Gein, this is one that I have not seen, but it's a 1974 film called Deranged. And it's about a man who is living in a rural area with his very religious mother. So obviously we already see where this is going. And his mother ends up dying and the man becomes digging up bodies and also murdering women. And this man also happens to have a thing for skinning human bodies and making masks of human flesh. So once again, this is just an exact replica of Ed Gein's actual hobbies and life. There's also multiple biopics that were made of him, obviously. So there's a movie called Ed Gein from 2001, Ed Gein, The Butcher of Plainfield from 2007, Ed Gein, The Musical from 2010, just fucking pretty weird to me. Ed Gein obviously served as the inspiration for Leatherface from the Texas Chainsaw Massacre from 1974, which is one of the most iconic films ever made. And that's the crazy thing is, like, a lot of these films, I'm going to go over a couple more, but mostly Texas Chainsaw and Psycho, these are two of the most iconic horror films ever created. And even if, like, I think people in the horror community, even if you don't like either of these movies, you have to respect their place and you have to admit that they are two of the most influential and iconic horror films ever created. And they are both inspired by the same fucking person. So obviously Leatherface is very easily controlled by his family members. Obviously we see parallels of that with Ed Gein and his mother. On top of the fact that obviously Leatherface wore faces. He wore skin masks and Ed Gein made quite a few of those. Another incredibly iconic film, The Silence of the Lambs, Buffalo Bill was also based on Ed Gein. He was actually based on like a variety of serial killers. So he was based on Ed Gein, Ted Bundy, Ed Kemper, and Gary Heidnick. I did talk about Kemper a little bit in this episode, but he was based on Gein in the way that he would literally like skin his victims after killing them and then wear skin suits. Like Ed Gein's leggings made of human leg skin. I don't think I'll ever be over that one. That one for me is just like, for some reason, the most disturbing. Like obviously like the vulva really fucked me up, but just like a human, leggings made of human leg. I can't talk about it. I'm sorry. That really fucks me up. I've seen a lot of shit. I've read a lot of shit, but like I draw the line at human leg leggings. Goodbye. Another movie that I personally find to be iconic, though I know not everybody will because not everybody is a Rob Zombie fan and I respect that. However, I am. So obviously if you remember in House of 1000 Corpses, there, the opening scene or one of the earlier scenes is they're at Captain Spaulding's like house museum of horrors and museum of killers or whatever they call it. And they literally have an exhibition on Ed Gein. And I read this somewhere, I've never confirmed it, but I read it somewhere that the person playing Ed Gein in the exhibit is fucking Otis Driftwood. And Otis Driftwood from House of 1000 Corpses is the character that is based on Ed Gein. Once again, if you've seen the movie, I'm sure you can see where the inspiration comes from. But Otis Redwood also likes to skin his victims and wear their faces and use their bodies to create art like Fishboy and shit. And finally, American Horror Story Asylum. We have a character that is based off of Ed Gein. And admittedly, Asylum is not one of my favorite seasons. So I have not seen this season. I think I may maybe like 1.5 times, honestly. So I don't entirely remember this. So I'm resorting to the internet to tell me about it. But Dr. Oliver Thredson from American Horror Story Asylum is based on Ed Gein. So he's the guy, and I kind of remember this as I'm reading. So he pretends to befriend Lana and Kit, but he's basically just fucking with them. And it turns out that he's a serial killer and he has some mommy issues, clearly just like Ed Gein did. And then I kind of briefly remember this scene. I might be blacking it out, but there's a scene where they're in Dr. Thredson's playroom and they find that he makes things such as human skin lampshades and a skull bowl, which were real things that Ed Gein actually physically made and had in his home. I've never seen Con Air. I'm sorry. And like, I'm like kind of a Nick Cage stan in for some movies. Like I'm a huge National Treasure fan, but I've never seen Con Air. But apparently Garland Green is also based on Ed Gein. I can't give you any information on that because again, I've never fucking seen it. This song by Slayer called Dead Skin Mask is also based or inspired by Ed Gein, and Ed Gein also inspired this grunge band Tad. Never heard of them, but apparently in 1989 they wrote a song called Nipple Belt. And obviously, as you can imagine, that is inspired by Ed Gein. One of my favorite horror movies is American Psycho, and in the movie Patrick Bateman attributes a quote to Ed Gein. He's like, you know what Ed Gein used to say about women? He said, when I see a pretty girl walking down the street, I think two things. One part of me wants to take her out, talk to her, be real nice and sweet and treat her right. The other part wonders what her head would look like on a stick. This was mistakenly attributed to Ed Gein because it was actually Ed Kemper that said this. And this is the third time I am bringing up Ed Kemper in this episode. So maybe we got to do an Ed Kemper episode. That guy was fucked. That guy also still very much alive. Would love to talk to him. So that's the story of Ed Gein, and now I'm sure you understand how and why he inspired some of our most iconic villains in the horror community. Now, I think the true crime community can be like really fucked up at some points because we tend to just like give these people such a platform and forget that they really affected people's lives so terribly. Like this guy, whether he killed one woman, two women, his brother, he felt like people were affected by this. Like Frank Worden had to find his mother's body, like fucking strung up and decapitated. Like it's really fucked up. Like again, as a true crime lover, I get it because it's just so interesting for me, at least, how these people's minds work and what drives them to this madness. But I just hate the fact that like we know the names of the killers, but we don't always know the names of the victims. Like that's really fucked up. Rest in peace to the people who were involved in this case and who were taken away from this earth at the hands of somebody who was fucking selfish and fucking deranged. I really hope everybody's families in this case found peace, including the families of the people whose bodies were dug up and mutilated, because like, yes, they were already dead, but that's just like such a fucking violation and such a desecration. And I didn't really see much from the families. I don't know if we have any of that information, but I hope these people like got proper reburials, you know, because I don't know what they mean when they say that they disposed of the items properly or whatever the fuck they said. Like, what does that even mean? Like, these are humans. These are people's family members. I do a true crime series on TikTok, or at least like I used to more so. I haven't in a while. But in that series is the one where like people have to pay you. I would never fucking make you guys pay to watch my videos. Fuck that. Playlist. I used to do a true crime playlist and I kind of stopped doing that, but I might get back into it because I do really enjoy true crime. But I always slandered everybody I fucking talked about because again, if you are idolizing these fucking people, go to fucking therapy. And I mean that wholeheartedly from somebody who is a fucking therapist. Okay. Go to therapy, get better idols and grow the fuck up. Fuck these people. Fuck Ed Gein. Absolutely fuck him. Again, I always say you can feel bad for the child. You can have sympathy for the child, but not for the adult that they grew up and chose to be. And for the lives that they selfishly decided to take. Anyway, there you have it. There's a story of Ed Gein and how he inspired all of the villains that you know and love. Let me know if you guys like the true crime thing. I can talk about true crime and I can talk about horror literally all fucking day. I think next week I'm going to be doing an episode on the list of horror movies in my life that have actually truly genuinely scared me. Because as somebody who's been watching horror movies for my whole entire life, which is about to be 29 years, I am essentially fucking desensitized, as you can imagine, and I'm sure a lot of people can relate to that. However, there have been a decent handful of movies in my life that have absolutely fucked me up, but not even just as a child, like as a full-ass grown adult. So I think I'm going to do an episode on that. I've done a TikTok on that before, but some people were asking for that after I kind of like when I did my horror by decades episodes, I kind of briefly mentioned like this movie genuinely scared me, but I want to put them all in one place for you. So I'll probably be doing that next week. I am still going to be doing an episode on The Exorcist, doing a full breakdown, kind of talking about like weird shit that happened on set and all that good stuff. So until next time, obviously, you know where to find me, horror_chronicles on TikTok and Instagram. I post especially on TikTok almost every day. So until then, watch more horror movies and stay spooky, my friends.